Hello, my name is Dr. Christian Heim.
And my name is Dr. Caroline Heim.
We've got some exciting news.
We'll be talking about all things relationship.
All things relationship?
All things relationship.
That's a lot to talk about, Caroline.
Well, we've got a lot of talk shows to talk about it.
We have a lot of talk shows to talk about it, but what we are going to do is we're going to look at a study that has been done on relationships so that everything is backed by the science that we talk about here, and then we'll be looking at how you can apply some of that science into your life and into your relationship, and we will be looking at those relationship issues that perhaps we all come across and need a little bit of help in from time to time, Caroline.
Yeah, so it's really for people that are perhaps struggling in their relationship or want to make their relationship better, whether you're just starting out in a relationship, you're 20 years in, you're 50 years in. It's actually for anyone that's in a relationship, in a long-term relationship or wants to be in a long-term relationship.
And it's not only for people who are struggling, not only for people who are looking at a relationship, but if you're in a good relationship, hey, there's nothing wrong with making a good thing better.
Absolutely.
So we will see you, or you will hear us, on Friday night, 9 p.m.
Friday night, ET, so New York time, at 9 p.m.
Hello, I'm Dr. Christian Heim, and I'm a clinical psychiatrist.
And my name's Dr. Caroline Heim, and I'm an associate professor.
And together we're here on this talk show to bring you the science and the evidence of keeping your relationship together so that you thrive as a couple.
And we just want to welcome you to episode 4 of our Resilient Relationships talk show. So what are we talking about today, Christian?
So today we're talking about conflict. Well, resolving it anyway.
Good.
Some strategies to do that.
But let's really talk about conflict. That's always fun to talk about.
All right, let's talk about conflict, all right? And look, to talk about conflict is one of those things that it's a whole life and whole human history problem. That we've had a problem with conflict ever since we were alive as human beings. So, as a bit of an outline for today, we're going to talk about first about conflict, then we're going to talk about the importance of resolving conflict or some alternatives to resolving it. Then we're going to look at the findings of our book where we talk about couples and how they argued. Then we're going to look into a paper that we have in press that talks about specific strategies to handle conflict.
And we might do a little bit of arguing along the way.
No, we won't.
Yes, we will.
No, we won't.
No, I decided that we were going to have an argument.
No, I decided that we'd have one spontaneously if it came up.
No, I already worked this out, Christian.
No, we're not doing it your way.
No, we're going to do it my way this time. No way.
What is your way?
Well, I like to decide that we're going to have an argument and we have a good old argument and then, you know, it's a lot of fun.
All right, seriously, we did have an argument as to whether we would have an argument or not.
We did.
Okay. So that's the first take-home point, right? Because the latest research is actually showing that conflict is not bad for your relationship. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's really a surprising finding, but a really important finding. Okay, so we're going to jump into conflict, yeah? Let's talk about conflict.
Conflict. So we thought that we'd take you straight into the brain with conflict as to why nobody actually likes conflict and actually why none of us do it well. In the whole world, there is nobody that you can point to that says, I do conflict well. Right? We all do it badly because we all hate it, and it's embedded in our brain.
That's right. I mean, you can learn to do conflict well, can't you?
You can learn to do it a bit better, right?
Okay, all right. Tell us more about conflict in the brain.
So what we found out about the brain over the last 20 years is that there are huge chunks of your brain dedicated to other people, dedicated to getting on with other people, dedicated to seeing how you fit in with other people. And we found out that we are not actually all individuals just trying to get on with each other. We are part of something larger than ourselves. And that's quite exciting, actually, because part of the science of conflict is also part of the science of love. Because what we do as human beings is we monitor each other so that we can actually get on, because we are actually social creatures. We have to get through life together.
Okay, so that's the part of the brain. Is there a specific part of the brain?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
So, Caroline, we're going to my favorite part of the brain, if you're allowed to have one.
The anterior cingulate gyrus.
The anterior cingulate gyrus.
Again, back there again. Okay.
All right. So in a sense, we all have two brains, a left and a right brain, which is very interesting because it's a metaphor, not science, but a metaphor for having to be in relationship in yourself. And in a very real sense, we all have conflict in our very selves, right? We all want different things. Sometimes we want to be the center of attention, but sometimes we want to hang back. Sometimes we wish we were this and we'd want the opposite as well. So conflict is there in ourselves. But when it comes to other people, the anterior cingulate gyrus, which just means the front bit of the bit that wraps around the corpus callosum like a belt, and it's a bulge. It's a huge chunk of the brain that's dedicated to other people. And what we do is we feel empathy for other people. So if we see other people in pain, we feel that pain ourselves. That is empathy. We are actually connected to each other, which is why when you see a car accident or something like that, it's like a shudder goes through you, hoping that it doesn't happen to you, but also feeling bad that it happened to somebody else. So we are actually connected in our brains. Then we have another part of the brain called the insular cortex, which monitors how we get on with other people. Because one of the most life-threatening things for all of us is to feel that you are not part of the human herd, that you're not part of the crowd.
So true. Yeah, that's that loneliness and that outsider.
If we feel that we're an outsider because of conflict, another part of our brain, the amygdala, which is like a little almond, whose job it is to keep us alive, starts us feeling fear, anger, and will fight for our survival. So that's all the heart palpitations that we get. All of that goes through the amygdala that tells the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland to tell the body to go into fight or flight mode.
So if we're feeling on the outside, or are you, let's get specific about that. If we're feeling conflict, that's when the amygdala goes into fight mode.
That's right.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons that the amygdala will go into fight or flight mode. Okay. Because conflict means that our lives could be threatened.
Yes, and they can.
That's right.
They can. It's so important to for that to happen.
So let's go into a couple relationship. If you feel that you're in conflict with the person that you are closest to, I know it sounds dramatic, but that actually feels life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why our brain will make us feel bad and we will do what we can to feel good. So let me go through those pathways of feeling bad. Conflict. Your anterior cingulate gyrus feels that you are in conflict with somebody that you should be in harmony with. Your insular cortex monitors how you're getting on with them, and it sends a message back to your brain, to the thinking part of your brain, the prefrontal cortex, to say, not getting on really well at the moment. What happens then is the amygdala starts to get agitated, it gets aroused, and then you go into fight or flight mode, and the amygdala tells the hypothalamus to tell the pituitary gland to put the body into fight or flight mode. So your heart rate goes up, you start feeling tense, you start feeling keyed up, and you start having all of those reactions that we associate with anxiety.
Yeah, because you certainly do get, your heart rate does go up. But so in couple terms, the fight and flight is the fight is, okay, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to, you know, argue this out. Or the flight is the running away, the avoiding, the silent treatment, whatever it happens to be. And we'll talk a lot about that a bit later.
Okay, we will. Yeah. However, I've got to give the good news about the brain too.
Okay.
All right. Because when you're in a couple relationship, that feeling of love and attachment that you have is mediated by a chemical called oxytocin. And oxytocin is something that we've learned about in the last 20 years. It's very high in birth suites. It's that love that mothers feel for children. It's high at weddings. That feeling of love, trust, and attachment is mediated by oxytocin. But here's what oxytocin does in a couple relationship. Oxytocin will actually tell the amygdala to chill. It's okay, amygdala. It's okay if things go wrong in life. It's okay if we're in conflict because somebody loves us. which is why the whole idea of resolving conflict in a relationship is so important, because you want to get back close to the person who loves you to get over that conflict so that you feel that love and you go back into what we call peaceful mode, rest and digest, rather than fight or flight.
Okay, so the amygdala has taken over, you've run away from the conflict as a couple, and then the oxytocin comes and says, no, but I really want to get back in relationship.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And this is why we almost have this stereotypical view that couples make up in love after a conflict, because it feels so good to have the oxytocin flowing again.
It does.
Feels so good to be in relationship and to have the conflict resolved, managed, handled, accepted, however.
Okay. Great. Well, that's conflict in the brain. Thank you so much for that.
Okay.
All right. No, resolution.
Yeah, resolution.
Yeah, I mean, because that, and we were sort of starting to touch on that a bit, but yes,
we were.
Resolution.
Okay. This is why resolution is so important.
Yeah.
Right. So just now we've been talking about how bad you will feel if conflict is not resolved. So one of the things about resolving conflict is it makes you feel good. But there are certain bad things that happen if conflict is not resolved or handled or managed. We'll look at that, all right? Firstly, the relationship can fall apart. And that's, I'm sorry, but it's just a bad outcome. You end up with two lonely people rather than two happy people.
Yes.
The second thing is, if we do not learn the skills of how to handle, manage, or accept conflict, it can actually escalate to violence. And unfortunately, domestic violence is a big and important problem in our society today.
Mm.
So what we're talking about here aims at reducing those two things, the breakup of relationships and domestic violence. It also leads to a poor sense of yourself, poor parenting. The children learn bad patterns, which they then bring into their relationships later on. And basically, we would like conflict resolved. Anyway, that's just the way that I look at it.
We certainly do want conflict resolved. That's right. Okay, so we've looked at conflict and we've looked at resolution.
Yeah.
And that's really what our book looked at and our study.
Yeah. So tell us about our book, Caroline.
Okay, so we've talked about this on other episodes, but the conflict resolution, the book is actually, conflict resolution was part of our book. Our book is Resilient Relationship, Techniques for Surviving Hyperindividualism, Social Isolation and a Mental Health Crisis. And in that book, we interviewed 180 coupled individuals, and we also did a big major survey, which we'll get into when we talk about the study. But the important question that we asked the couples about conflict resolution was, do you argue? You know, and how often do you argue, and what do you argue about, and how do you resolve your arguments? And boy, we opened a can of worms then.
Okay, so we've always known that couples argue. We've always known that people don't like arguing. But some of our results were really quite surprising.
They were. It was really surprising. So we actually had 11% of the interviewed couples never argued.
Never argued.
Never argued. And 10% of them regularly argued daily. And I really mean daily. And I had three couples that argued right throughout the interview.
Okay.
Particularly one couple, mind you, I have to qualify that why that was. It was during election time. And okay. one was a Republican and one was a Democrat. So it was pretty feisty for a while. But they were so incredibly comfortable with that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I suppose for me, that's another one of the take-home messages, to be comfortable with your level of arguing.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about 11% of couples that didn't argue at all, 10% of couples that argued every day, which means that 80% of couples were somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So most of us are going to be somewhere in between the extremes. But what I want to emphasize, from my point of view, these are all couples that were together more than 40 years. So even the couples that argued every day, they were comfortable with that. They were together. They didn't need to be together.
That's right. Very, very comfortable with it. Actually talked about how important arguing was, even.
All right, so how important is arguing, Caroline? Do you have any stories for us?
Yes, I certainly do. So this is actually Liz and Arnie from the UK that have been married for 51 years. And Arnie said, look, if you don't argue, the worst situation is that you don't have a relationship. Sometimes I'll just say, shout, okay, because you need to get that gas out of you. And sometimes releasing it helps to get the other person to realize how sincere you are with your point of view.
Okay, so this is a couple that actually said that arguing was important.
Yeah.
Because you let me know your feelings and how strongly you feel about that. And I actually want to know about that.
That's exactly right. And then we had Chuck and Marion from the USA, married 44 years. And they argued a lot too. They said you have to be able to express it. If you hold it in a while, a little tiny thing becomes a big deal. Then it's going to be a big burst. Then trust leaves. And I love this next comment. He said, we respect each other enough that we can get mad.
Okay, that's actually really good. Thanks for sharing that, Caroline. We respect each other enough that we can get mad with each other. And look, this brings one of the good sides of arguing for us, because the way that I see it is if you're able to get an argument out, it actually stops things escalating to long-term resentment and a whole lot of pent-up anger that can come out as an explosion or in physical violence, which is terrible.
In physical violence, or even verbal violence. It was really interesting because one of our couples from Estonia, actually, Tiiu and Innu, who've been married for 66 years, Tiiu said she gets very, very angry. Then she said, we haven't ever hit one another, but with words, I have hit him.
Yeah.
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 So,
words,
I mean,
it can.
I mean, can be that powerful. So, yeah. So, yeah, now we're getting into the extremes, but, yeah.
Yeah, we are getting to the extremes, but it also talks to the idea as to why people will avoid an argument, because once a word is said, you can't take it back.
Yeah.
Right? But here's the thing. If you're in a relationship where words have been said or there have been arguments in the past that have been hurtful, the way I see it is you can see that as a barrier, or you can grow through that so that your relationship can actually work better and grow closer.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of common knowledge that, you know, it's not good to argue. Well, and there's a lot of studies out there that say it's not good to argue. And in psychiatry and psychology, yes.
Yep.
But we did come across a few studies recently that saying that actually to actually get some of that conflict out is good.
Okay, so before you go into that study, Caroline, I just want to say that in a way all of psychiatry is based on the idea of resolving conflict. So if you do individual psychotherapy, you go to a psychiatrist and you say, look, there are a few things that I want that are in conflict. There are things inside my head that I don't like. And can you help me resolve this, please? So one way of looking at couples therapy is that it's an extension of individual psychotherapy, because, as I said, we have conflicts within ourselves. But when you get to with another person who is a free agent, can make their own decisions and want things, good grief, that may be different to what I want or you want, then there's going to be conflict. So how do you resolve that?
Yeah.
So the idea was, and this is very much an idea from last century, that if you have good communication and if you behave well and if you can resolve your conflicts, then that's good. But this century, the research is showing that that's not actually the case.
Yeah, this is actually a study by Overall et al. In 2016. And they looked at a lot of different studies, but they came to the conclusion, obviously, they did some empirical research in this and did interviews and surveys. They found that it is actually important to engage in conflict, and even though they were citing Gottman and quite a few of the others to saying similar things in this century, it's important to engage in conflict because it fosters growth and security in the relationship.
Yeah. And as one of our couples told us in our book, the worst thing is if you don't argue that you don't have a relationship. And one of the ways that you can avoid conflict altogether is don't talk to anybody.
That's right.
Right? But if you've got to talk to somebody, there's going to be conflict.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, then there were, of course, the 10% that you know, very proudly said that they hadn't argued at all.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they actually wore that as a badge of honour, and good on them. They, you know, that was a really important thing for them as a couple. That was the way they did conflict, by not arguing.
Yes, that's true. but I want to share a story. This was a wonderful experience that I had once. We were on a plane from Europe to London, and we were separated. We ended up in different seats because the flight was very full. So I was in a row of three, and this couple came and sat next to me. And you could feel the tension the moment they arrived. They were barely looking at each other, and it didn't take long before it started. You had to say that. That's not what I meant. Are you going to bring that up again? I can't believe that you're not over that. And for a full hour's flight, they argued. They argued really hard, and they were really into each other. And I was the only person who could hear. And at the end of a flight, you've got just a few moments before you leave these people, never to see them again. And I use those moments to just say a few things.
Okay. Spill it. What did you say?
Okay. So they had a really heated verbal argument, and I said to them, I just want to let you know that I'm a clinical psychiatrist.
Oh, no, they said. I don't believe of all people we sat next to.
Then I said to them, and I specialize in couple therapy. And you could feel their jaws drop. Okay, but I said to them, I want to let you know that I have never heard such a respectful, honest, full-on caring argument as that. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, you guys, you've got a great relationship. I believe you're going to make it. The nice thing for me is I let them go first. And as you go over the air bridge, I saw them hold hands and they held each other so tightly. It was just a beautiful thing to see.
Oh, that's lovely.
And there you could see the oxytocin flowing after the conflict where their amygdalas were both engaging in fight, and yet they ended up more together by the end of that.
Yeah.
That was just such a privilege for me to see. I got to say, it was such a privilege.
That's really lovely, yeah. So you have talked about this before, how when we actually only argue with the people that we're closest to,
yes.
it's a privilege in a way,
yeah.
Because you can go deeper into a relationship
yeah.
because of that.
Yeah, thanks for that reminder, because it's true. We only actually argue with people that we care about. The people that you actually argue with are your spouse, your family members, your parents, your children, your close friends, even distant friends, you just don't bother. And somebody in the street, you may have a small altercation because somebody pushed in front of the line, but you don't actually care about them. It's not really an argument. It's just getting through the day. But real arguments happen with people that you care about.
Yeah, so important. Yeah.
But you were going to tell us about people who avoided arguments.
Oh, yes, yes. So there's Stella, a litigation lawyer, that we interviewed, and she had been married to Fred for 42 years, and she gets paralyzed when any conflict comes up. She says, I can't think or do anything at all. Sometimes that sort of paralysis goes on for days.
For days?
Yeah, for days.
Oh, wow.
She's like,
okay.
You know, this sort of, I guess it's a kind of a flight, isn't it?
Well, it's actually a freeze. It's a deer in the headlight, okay? It is somebody who freezes up when they're under a lot of tension. And again, that's mediated by the amygdala talking to the hypothalamus, okay, to have a reaction. And in that moment, you don't think straight,
yeah.
okay? You are paralyzed by fear.
Yeah. And it is. It is actually a visceral response. Carol
yes.
had a visceral response too. She'd been married for Steve. She is married to Steve, and they've been together for 53 years from the USA. She said, oh, my body says, oh, God, how can I put up with this? I don't like this. I don't like this feeling it's giving me. So I will do anything to avoid it.
Okay, so that's after 53 years
yes,
of
yes,
marriage.
Yes.
So that's what we term a successful marriage. And yet they have conflict, which paralyzes her.
Really hard. And then you've got the couples that have different approaches, like
yeah.
some are avoidant and some like to argue. And
yeah.
and I had people saying, you know, look, he just won't argue. He won't argue. It's like speaking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
And Marilyn and Gregory said, well, Marilyn said, how can you have an argument with someone who just wanders off? So you've got
yeah.
you've got this conflicting style of argument that's obviously from parental modeling or something.
Yeah, okay, so this is all coming to another take-home message from the way that I see it, and that is that it's horses for courses. Everybody's got their own way of handling conflict, and sometimes in couples therapy, we like to think, here's the answer, everybody do this and you'll be fine.
Mm.
But we can't all argue, or we can't all avoid arguing, or we can't all communicate well. But these are people who get to know each other, and the bottom line of how people negotiate conflict over time is they get to know each other, they get to trust each other, and they get to work out what works for their relationship. I suppose that takes talking.
It does. It most definitely does. Yeah. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we had people that just got very expressive in their arguing.
Expressive.
So Alexandra and Alex from Russia, married 58 years, long time.
58 years.
Yeah. They had a lot of conflict in their relationship, they talked to me about. And Alexandra said she used to throw things. And she said, always the worst cup and always into the kitchen sink. I knew what I was doing. It was an emphasis I had to make. I love it. She had this lovely, strong Russian accent. She just said, every time she'd just find a cup or something and just, that was her way. She just expressed it and got it out.
Okay, so that's important. Rather than being destructive, because she was throwing it into the sink, you could see that she was containing her destruction, if you like.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was calculated.
Oh, it was chosen. But it was a performance.
But it was still an expression of feeling, of very strong and very authentic emotion as well.
That's right, yeah, that's right. And then Pat always used to internalize things. So she used to be an avoider.
Right.
But her husband, Jim, had PTSD.
Yeah.
And she said, I used to internalize everything, and she still has to fight that. But now, she said, I go out and slam a cupboard door, and I feel much better that I do that.
That's good.
Yeah, so she's really worked on externalizing it.
And then Jim has to fix the cupboard door.
Love it.
All right, so we talked about, you just mentioned parental modeling.
Yeah.
So we talk about, where do we get our different styles from? So we talk about conflict styles. And conflict styles, as the evidence shows, comes from our background. Our cultural background, but mainly our family of origin, the family that we grew up with, or the temperament that we inherited from our parents. We will have some of that too. So some people just know that they inherited their temper from their father. Other people just know that they inherited their avoidance from their mother, and everything in between. And this is what we call a style. So when you get into a relationship, you've got two different styles trying to blend. So in other words, people won't even agree on how to resolve conflict.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So there is that point in the marriage where you're sort of negotiating, in a way, how you do conflict.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the thing is that, okay, another one of those stereotype ways of looking at things is when a newly wedded couple have their first argument.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I know. Yeah, that's always an issue. And some, because of the styles that they've brought in with them, have a real issue. Like one of the couples, the female in the couple said, you know, when we had our first argument, I thought that was it. I thought that the marriage was over, because my parents never argued, you know, and I thought, that's it. You know, we're going to be signing the divorce papers soon. She was terrified, you know.
Yeah.
So.
So I'm just going to just drill into that a little bit, okay, because we may look at that as some sort of a stereotype or one of those rites of passage that newlyweds have to go through. But the thing is that after a couple of months of marriage, you're not experts on each other yet. You're still growing trust. You're still getting to know each other. And here's what it may look like after 50 or 60 years, right? Sometimes people argue over exactly the same things and don't handle it any better after 60 years. Oh. So in other words, no, we still haven't got this figured out.
Oh, like you being late.
Okay, I just got to say that Caroline's referencing a little play that we put on there. I'm not actually very late.
Oh, no?
Not as late as Caroline
is.
Oh,
right. Okay. Do you want to have an argument about it now?
All right, but mostly what happens is people get to know each other, so that over 60 years, that same issue can either be talked about and handled in a different way, in a way that means moving forward, or it can be avoided. It can be, you know what, we're in this area again. I know your ideas on this. You know my ideas on this. Why should we argue and ruin a day without actually being able to move forward? So the take-home message from my point of view is, it doesn't matter. A relationship doesn't depend on you arguing well or actually resolving all the conflict. What a good relationship depends on is the trust that you've built, the way that you can lean on each other, how you know each other, and the growth that you've made together as a couple.
That's true, because I actually did ask a lot of the couples, has your arguing approach changed over time? Have you got it together? And yeah, a lot of them said, no, we argue as much as we did, or maybe a little bit less, but, you know, it's more, we trust each other more. And a lot of them use the word mellow. We've mellowed, you know, and we've matured into things. And there's a sort of a knowing in that too, you know, because, they get to know each other and perhaps know more about why they're arguing.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what gets the oxytocin flowing, just knowing that you are with somebody who is safe. And so when we talk about good relationship, we're actually talking about relational security that keeps two people attached. And just knowing how somebody else is part of that security, that consistency, that they're not going to change all of a sudden. And sometimes they do, and then you start to lean on all that consistency that you've had for years to cope with something that's new, right? But it's that consistency that you built up as a couple on day by day, showing commitment, showing love, showing attachment.
I just want to go back to that point that you know, we were talking about, that you've made many times before about going deeper in the relationship, that arguing, of course, is a form of communication. And you do go deeper in the relationship because there was one couple that, you know, they gradually, one of them actually learned how to argue because she came from a background that was very avoidant. Her parents never argued. But she said she actually, you know, got to actually say some things which she would normally keep inside. And so her husband got to know her more through actually, you know, she got to the point she was actually able to yell some of those things out, and they actually got a bit closer through that.
Actually, that's such a good point. I'm so glad that you said that, Caroline, because that actually brings up the idea of it's not what you argue about. And we often think that we've got to resolve what the argument is about. The most important thing is actually how you argue, the process of arguing, how you have respect for each other, like that couple on the plane did. I mean, they went at it hammer and tongs, but I could feel this underlying respect that they had for each other and how much they valued each other. And it's having that feeling of respect and valuing of each other underneath whatever the words are, that's part of the process. All right, so you want to go into arguing as a process? All right, I will spend a bit of time on this because it's worthwhile, because often we think that as a couple, we just talk to each other. But there are actually different forms of talking in our day-to-day relationship. Most of our talking is logistics or on the fly. Will you get this on the way home? Are you taking the kids to school? What time is it now? And all of those sort of things. That's what I call on the fly or logistic talking, okay? But there are other forms of talking. A conversation is a form of talking. But a conversation is a two-way street. You may have some time, you may sit down with a cup of coffee or tea, and you have an exchange of ideas, and it feels really good. That's very different to listening. Now, listening's going to come up as the one of the top ways of resolving conflict, but listening is very different to talking. When you listen, it's actually a one-way street. The idea is to get one person to talk for most of the time and the other person who is doing the listening just to go, and then what happened? Is this what you mean? Just to ask questions, to do nothing else, not judge, not come in with an opinion, but just to say, I get it. So this is what I think you're telling me. You're telling me this, that, that, and that. Is that right? And if the person says, no, you've missed this, then they will correct you, and that is the essence of a good listening session. And we'll come back to listening because it really is the number one strategy to resolve conflict.
Yeah, but not easy to do when your amygdala is freaking out and saying stress, 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 and getting your heart rate going. Say to actually be able to stand outside of yourself and say, okay, let's just, you know, listen here, and all of it's that's not exactly easy. Right. It's so much easier to talk about, but to actually do in the moment.
That's right. That's right. But you see, in the moment, we're talking about another mode of communicating, of talking, which is arguing. Right. It's you can't listen while you're arguing. And when you're arguing, you're not having a conversation. You're having an argument, right? And it is a very different mode, right? Just a few of the other different modes that couples talk to each other in. Couples will have their own secret language, their own secret love language. There'll be things that you say to your partner as a lover that nobody else gets to hear, right? And there, you might have a little pet language. There are certain things that you share. So we've got now a list of different ways of communicating. Just talking on the fly about logistics, having a conversation, having a listening session, having an argument, and intimate talk that is just for love times. Now, there are five different ways, and there's a few more, but I'll just leave it at those five at the moment. Because a lot of couples feel under pressure that they're having an argument and that's a bad thing to have, and they should be listening. But as you just said, it's really hard to listen when you've got emotions behind what you're saying and you're in argument mode. The thing is, and this is what I do as a couples therapist, is however long the argument takes, be it 5 minutes, half an hour, 3 hours, or 3 days, all right, come back and have a listening session afterwards, okay? Because a listening session then sounds like something like, well, what was that all about? This is what I heard from you. Am I right? Okay. And it's that coming together afterwards. That's where I believe the growth actually is, to then sort through the emotions by adding some thoughts with it to sort of say, I think this is what you were feeling. Am I right about that? And in that listening session, then somebody gets the opportunity to say, well, I put my case down there a bit strongly, but yeah, that's basically what I wanted to say. And I really feel strongly about this.
Yeah. Good. I think we're getting into a resolution now. So,
are we?
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into that paper that we've got on conflict resolution strategies.
Yeah, on conflict resolution strategies. Let's talk about that. So that was part of the major study that we did that filled into the book. So some of the couple's comments that we interviewed were part of that. But the majority of the comments actually came from 1,112 coupled individuals that we surveyed. Yep. And we actually asked them, what is your top tip for conflict resolution?
Yeah.
So we actually looked at some of their tips, their strategies, the way that they went about things.
Yeah.
And that was actually represented 48 people from 48 countries in the world. From various different socioeconomic backgrounds, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I enjoyed doing this study, all right, and I enjoyed writing it up. And while we were doing it, I kind of got to know how important it was, because when I work with a couple in couples therapy, they argue, and it's firstly they sheepishly sort of say, yes, we argue, and they feel so bad. Yeah. They feel so bad about arguing, all right, because their amygdala is going haywire, all right, and they want to get to the love. They want to get to that oxytocin flow that makes them feel good about each other. So that's why we did the study, to see what couples who had been together such a long time said worked for them.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you said that they felt so bad, because that was one other question that we did actually ask them about their discontent in arguing. And interestingly, 37% said that arguing didn't bring any discontent.
Oh, that's good.
And 3% said it brought much discontent.
Okay.
So obviously they're not in the middle of the arguing at the time when it feels so bad. If they did the survey then, obviously they'd be like, no, this is making me feel terrible because I want to get back in relationship.
Yeah.
But that's quite a surprising result.
Well, it is. And it shows again that you've got the gamut of outcomes.
Yeah.
People who arguing, it's okay, we just do it every day. Or arguing, oh my gosh, I feel so bad, I wish we would never argue, okay? So to get these strategies and to see what happened, one of the take-home messages is whatever happens in your relationship is your relationship. All right. And it's just good to talk about the process. I feel really bad about arguing, or I would like us to do this. Could we try this? It would help me if you did that. And when you get to know each other and trust each other and you're on the same page about the outcome, that the relationship gets better and continues, then you can actually use arguing to your advantage.
Mm. Yeah, you can.
All right.
All right. Should we get to the...
Get to the results.
The results of the study of the top tips.
The top tips.
Mm-hmm. Okay, shall I list them out then?
List them out.
Number one, and these top four were big percentages, of what most people say. Number one, and Christian alluded to this earlier, is listen.
Listen.
Okay.
Listen.
Number two was avoid confrontation.
Avoid confrontation. Yes. What, that was a surprise
that
result.
It was, actually. And number three was communicate well. And number four was compromise.
Mm. So as a couples therapist, I like results 1, 3, and 4, okay? It's good to listen because that's what therapists do. It's good to communicate well because we feel that we're sort of getting on well. And it's good to compromise because it means that you're listening to each other and you're just caring about each other just to let go a little bit so that you meet somewhere in the middle. For me, the big surprise, but a very important revelation for me, because I learned a lot through this, is the importance of avoiding arguing.
I know. So it seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? From the research that we've been looking at recently and everything, but so many couples said that was really important. And why is it important? Why do you think it's important?
Okay. So let me talk about first as to why avoiding is demonized, okay? Because as a therapist, you want to talk about stuff. You want to reveal stuff. You want to be honest. You want to get the layout of the land and move forward. You can't do that if you're avoidant, okay? And in psychiatry, we know that being avoidant is a problem, okay? Because if you avoid your own problems, if you avoid conflict, it means that you're not going to develop the resilience that you need to move forward. However, there's something very subtle in avoidance as a technique for couples. Avoidance is not just we're going to avoid conflict at all costs. It's actually, no, you know what? I know my partner. I trust my partner. And I know that if we have an out-and-out argument about it, it's not going to be good for the relationship. It's not going to be good for me, and it's not going to be good for them. So it is actually a technique that can be used to move forward in a relationship and to avoid a whole lot of bad feelings.
Mm. Yeah, wow. That's really insightful. So it's actually a gift. It's actually an act of nurturing the relationship in a way, saying, no, I want to preserve this relationship. This isn't going to be healthy for us.
Okay, that's actually a wonderful way of articulating something that's been talked about by Susan Johnson and emotionally focused couples therapy. There are some people who, by nature, are kind of chimpanzees. That's what I call them, okay? And I tend to be a chimp in our relationship.
Oh, yes.
And chimps will want to get it out, love it out, hug, and sort of express everything. But some people are turtles. Some people don't want to let it all hang out, express absolutely everything, say all the bad things, say all the good things. They want it a bit more contained.
Oh, that's definitely me.
And part of that is caring for the relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's to preserve the relationship. And it's a strength. It's not a weakness. So when you see it as a strength, then all of a sudden you can see how avoidance can actually be good for a relationship.
We should actually do an episode on the chimp and the turtle.
We will go into that
at the moment.
Yeah. And so in the midst of this, we looked for evidence as to where avoidance is helpful. And particularly in business situations, conflict is often best avoided, and it also has a cultural element to it.
Okay? Very much.
So the stereotype is the British will tend to avoid things, whereas the Americans will tend to express them. Or the Japanese will tend to avoid things where the Chinese will tend to express them. So there's a cultural element as well. And being a cultural element means, and yep, this is according to my clinical experience and to my way of thinking, is one way is not better than the other. It's just different.
That's right. So there were quite a few intercultural couples that we had.
Yes.
And the Chileans did not understand the Australian and British reserve and avoidance.
Yes.
And they said, oh, we just want to really just get it all out. There's no point in keeping it in, you know. And then we had others that were, you know, that some of the Brits actually said, oh, I don't understand why people have to get things out. So there were the cultural elements in that too.
Yeah. And that sort of feeds into one of the take-home messages from today is it's not always a case of right or wrong. It's a case of knowing your relationship, your partner, trusting that you're actually growing together. Doesn't matter what conflict resolution strategies you do or don't use.
True. All right, so we went straight to number two, which was avoid confrontation. Can we talk a little bit more about listening?
I was avoiding that one.
I know you were. I'm bringing you back to it.
Okay. yeah, listening. Okay, so I suppose what therapists do is listen. And listening is, as Carl Rogers said, just a way of having unconditional positive regard for somebody so that they can actually express who they are, and you do nothing but accept who they are rather than judge who they are and bring in your opinion as to where you would do things differently.
Yeah, this is really interesting, this idea of listening, because I actually, as a theatre professor, spend a lot of time teaching my students how to listen on stage. Now, that sounds strange, doesn't it? Because actors are always communicating. They're saying their lines, right?
Yeah.
But when I go to the theatre, I don't always look at the person that is communicating. I look at the person that is listening and thinking, are they really there? Or if they're thinking of what their next line is. And that's really a really bad habit that actors get into. But I actually have to teach them how to listen, especially the younger generation who are in front of screens all the time don't get much opportunity to learn how to listen, to really actively listen. So I actually have to teach them how to listen.
Yeah, and this is what I find so attractive about the work that you do, because theatre, being in a play on stage, is really about relationship. And then there's a relationship between the actors and the audience, and that's what makes live theatre so special, that it's spontaneous and it's about relationship. But the basis of it is actually listening than speaking.
Because if they're actually just thinking in their head of what their next line is, or how they look on stage, or all those awful, awful actor habits, then they're not in relationship with a person.
Yeah.
They haven't built any relationship. They're not their lover. They're not their sister. They're not their mother. They're not their brother. They're not caring. They're not actually in the moment and being very real on stage and authentic. Because when we go to the theatre, we want to see relationships. Theatre is all about relationships, as Christian said, and as we've said in other episodes. But we want to see the tension, or we want to see something, some sort of discourse, some electric air between them, something that you can cut, tension that you can cut with a knife, because that's what theatre is, drama. It's all about that. And if one person's not engaged in the relationship, then it fizzles.
Yeah.
And there's not those wonderful electric air moments where the audience is on the edge of their seat, you know, going, wow, and being carried along with the narrative. They're not actually serving the play, they're serving themselves. They want all the attention on themselves. So this is why I teach them, listen, listen, listen above all else.
Okay, so how do you teach them to listen?
Well, number one, I get them to work on their relationship and a background of their relationship with each other, you know, going even back to childhood and such, if they're playing sisters and brothers. And then I have certain exercises. I actually use Sanford Meisner, because he has actually the best exercises for listening, where they just have to observe things about each other and really be focused on the other person. Because acting, when it's really its purest, is when the actors are being generous, and that is being involved in the other person and not in their own head. It's all about getting out of their own head and really listening to the other person, observing and listening to the words beneath what they're saying, and so what we call the subtext, but the emotions that carry it through. Listening to the emotions and thinking, wow, and reacting then. So acting is reacting. It isn't actually just talking.
Okay, so you've actually given us some gems there, and I just want to point them out, because listening as a therapist is something that, quite frankly, could save all relationships, could save us from world conflict, really. But you talked about getting to know the other character, getting to know their background. So just knowing, right? So there's the sense of knowing your partner. If you know your partner, then you will be listening to them more. And then you said a focus, to have a focus on what the other person is doing. And that to me brings in that aspect of caring and empathy, and to be there for somebody else. Then brings the idea of being generous, as you said, being a generous actor. So the science is actually showing, to be in a good relationship, you've got to care about the other person. You've got to be altruistic. You've just got to put up with some bad stuff sometimes, and you've got to be giving, right? Because the expectation, of course, will be that the other person will do that for you.
Mm.
But I'm just astounded that it's really the same thing in a craft like acting as it is in a relationship. That if a couple know each other, focus on each other, care for each other, and then actually trust. There's that idea of trust as well, because I know that actors need to trust each other on stage, or else they don't get through the performance.
That's right, because if anything happens, if you know they go up on lines, or if the play's not going well, the audience aren't with them, they have to trust the other person there, that if they're floundering, and if things aren't going well in the play, that the other person will catch them.
That's right.
And so there is so much trust.
There is so much trust. Stage. So yeah. I just have to explain for us ordinary lay folks that going up on lines means forgetting what you're supposed to say,
yeah.
Right?
We actually have oh my gosh, we have very strange names. We call one of those things corpsing, which is like dying on stage. And they're always extreme dramatic terms that we use in the theatre.
But it's about relationship.
Yeah, it is. It's all about relationship.
And listening is part of that core.
Essential part of it. Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're going to do a whole podcast on listening.
I think we will, yeah. So I think we'll just briefly touch on the other two that we talked about, communicating well and compromising.
Yeah.
Because even in the middle of an argument, communicating well, you've talked before, and I really would love you to touch on this, about using humour and heart.
Yeah.
Because people just, I mean, yes, you can't get your amygdala to shut down and go,
that's
okay,
right,
I'm going to listen. But there are some other avenues, other vehicles for you to put that energy that's coming, that's pulsing through your body at that time with your heart rate going so high,
yeah,
that you can put into, and you've talked about using humour and heart even,
yeah,
in the middle of an argument. So
yeah,
can you talk into that a bit?
Thank you. But it is actually difficult. Mm. It is difficult to do. But if a couple are in an argument and one says to the other, you know, I've never really noticed that freckle on the edge of your nose, in the middle of an argument, okay, the other person will know that the relationship is not at risk, okay? This person still cares about me, even though we're arguing, okay? Or even touch. Touch is actually an easy one. Easier, but hard when you're in conflict with somebody to reach a hand and put it on their shoulder to say, yeah, it's okay, because when you're touching somebody, you are in connection. And that, again, signals to the other person, our relationship is okay. We're having an argument, but the relationship is okay. So the way to do that for your relationship is to look at where strengths are in your relationship.
Mm.
If humor is a strength, if touch is a strength, if being able to just sit and listen is a strength, or if being able to walk out energies is a strength, come on, let's argue while walking.
Mm.
All right, then you use your strengths, what's good about your relationship, and you bring that into the argument so that the argument goes better.
Mm. It's not actually easy. This is so not easy, because
no.
I've been, even though I know some of these things, obviously, from Christian's teachings in some of his blogs and podcasts and just, you know, learning from life, it's so hard to implement. Okay, just I'm going to, even though I'm really not liking this person at the moment, I'm going to reach out and just pat them or just hold their hand or I'm going to bring, and I'm definitely not a human person, so it's not easy to bring humor. So I guess it's just being mindful, being present,
yes,
in the moment, trying to have that presence even when things are really so hot.
Yeah, but I just want to encourage people that it doesn't depend on the techniques.
No.
It depends on being a real human being.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's right. And we get it wrong all the time.
Well, that's exactly right. And particularly as a psychiatrist or as a therapist, sometimes psychologists, therapists and psychiatrists think they've got the answers, right? And so they go into an argument with this sort of like, oh, what did you really mean by that? Oh, I can see some of your self-referential denial going on there. And all this, and that, I'm sorry, but that's horrible, right?
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
I'm so glad you have never done that.
Yeah, okay. But that's a conscious decision that I've made, yes, to be myself. So you get to see my weaknesses and my strengths and my raw emotions,
yeah,
okay? Because if I put all that to the side, then I wouldn't be a real person in your life.
That's right.
And what we actually are in love with is a real person. And some of that means conflict. Some of that,
yeah,
means hurt, I'm sorry to say.
Some of it means getting it wrong.
That's
doing
right.
conflict wrong.
That's right.
Oh, I blew it again,
that's
you know,
right.
But no matter what you do, I'm still going to love you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
There were, however, some do's or don'ts that came out of this survey that we did.
Yes, there most definitely were. And maybe we'll just finish off with those because we often finish off with tips, but we've just given some tips then.
Well,
so.
Look, I think the do's and the don'ts are probably the best tips that we can give if you are in an argument. So, do be honest, right? Because if you're not honest, then you're not getting past what needs to get past.
And these are from our couples, by the way.
These are what couples tell us. Don't bring up the past. All right. Oh, it's a difficult one, isn't
Ouch.
It?
Yeah. Yes, gosh. It's such a good tactic. Oh, just bring up the past.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
Oh, when you did this, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the whole aim is to get through the argument together, not to win or lose, but to get through it. So as part of that, this is another do get your emotions out. Do let the other person know how you're feeling.
Yeah.
However, in converse to that is don't be reactive, right?
Yeah, because it can be too big. And chimps
it can be
do
too,
that. Chimps definitely do that.
So you've had some experience at that.
Is it?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, but more than anything, try not to be competitive.
Yeah.
Try to see yourselves on the same side, because if you get past it and have a better relationship because of it, you both win. If somebody wins and somebody loses an argument, then in a couple, you actually both lose.
Yeah, and that is actually something that our couples did say to us about winning. They said generally they aim to express and understand and reconnect rather than win.
That's right.
And that came with that 40 plus years married, you know, maturity that they had.
That's right.
They learnt that, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and you actually don't want to win.
Mm.
Right? Because if you win, that means that there's something that the other person had to say that you have not listened to.
And also if you win, you've both lost in a way.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. So I think that's plenty for today.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. We have thrown so much at you. I hope some of that you can digest. You can obviously go back and listen to things.
Listen.
Again, listen. It's all about listening. Or you can avoid everything we said if
That's
you really
right.
want. You know, it's up to you. Or you can communicate with your partner about it. Or maybe you'd like to compromise and do a little bit of both. Anyway, so we're just going to wrap it up there. We're so glad that you joined us. If you want to find any of our other material, you can go to the Dr. ChristianHeim.com website, because we've got blogs and we've got mental health podcasts there, and we've got a YouTube channel. We have a lot of material on preventative mental health, but we will be back in another month and we'll be sharing more about resilient relationships, and we really hope that you can join us then. This has been fun.
Please join us then. It has been fun. Hoping to speak to you again soon.
Catch you next time. Bye for now.